together that we can't do by ourselves. We can worship Jesus by ourselves throughout the week, but for us to all gather together and do it together so that our voices are encouraging one another to sing and we're all singing praise to Jesus together, that's an awesome thing that I hope that we learn to love and enjoy doing together. It's a big deal because that's what we're going to be doing for all of eternity. When you go to heaven, you will not be off in a corner by yourself worshiping Jesus. We're going to be doing it together. So this is kind of practice. So we need to practice. So we'll keep doing that. But it was good to sing with you. And before we get started, I need to take some time for us to pray. And you're going to get used to me saying this all the time. But we're going to ask Jesus to help us today. Because here's the deal. If you're going to encounter God through his word, I can't make that happen. If I'm going to teach by the power of the Spirit and be faithful to the word, I don't want to preach this on my own power. I want Jesus to help me do it. So we're going to ask him to do that. And so we're going to take some time to pray to ask him to help me teach and to help you listen. And I'm also going to ask for us to do something else. And I'll tell you this as we get closer to the end. Well, let's just pray and then I'll tell you that. Let's pray. God, I need you. I know that I'm weak. I know that I'm sinful. I know that we are all weak and sinful. And we know that you aren't, that you're strong and you're kind and you're gracious and you're patient and you're merciful. So God, we don't want to just sing praises to you today. We want to learn more about you. We want our hearts to well up in praise because of what we see in the word today. So God, I'm asking, would you help me to teach? God, would you help us all to listen? And God, I also know this, I do not deserve to be standing up here. I haven't earned it. But I also know that you died on the cross for my sins and that I get your righteousness. So God, that qualifies me to be up here. So God, I'm up here trusting that your death on the cross was enough for me. And I'm trusting that you're actually strong enough to change my heart and all of our hearts that are here, God. And I pray that all in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, well, I forgot to tell you this. If you're visiting, my name is Fayez. I'm the new senior pastor. Actually, my wife and family, we just moved here on Wednesday, Tuesday, I don't know what day it was. It's all a blur, but we're officially in town now, so we're pretty excited about that. Yeah, we're excited. Thank you, guys. You've been really kind, and you're welcome to us, and we're really grateful. But I got to be honest, I am so glad that I'm not driving back and forth between here and Rockledge anymore, and I'm glad to be here and for us to get this party started and see what God has for us as a church. And I do want to ask this. So 2 weeks ago when I was here last, I gave you a homework assignment. You didn't think I was going to ask, did you? Oh, you were wrong. The homework assignment I gave you was to pray for a local pastor and to send him an email or a note of encouragement, depending on your tech skills. Were y'all able to do that 2 weeks ago, or did you forget? How did we do with that? Yes, no, you can nod. We'll just go with nodding. You can be subtle. Okay, good. If you didn't do it, it's okay. Try it this week, but I want you to know something. I'm going to try something different today. I'm actually going to ask us to do something at the end of the service. At the end of the service, I'm going to ask you to pull out a piece of paper, or you can type on your phone if you don't do that, and here's what I'm going to ask us to do. I'm asking that you would write down the thing that you feel like you would hear from God through his word today. It may be something to do. He may have something for you to do. It may be something to repent of. It may be something, just a change in thinking. But what I want is, at the end of the service, I'm going to give us time to actually write that down. And here's why I'm doing that, for a couple reasons. One, and I've never done this before, so this could be completely awkward. We'll get used to it. Hopefully, I might not get used to it, and we won't do it again. But what I want for us to do here is I want us to learn that when we come to the word, there's something we should be experiencing from God, and we should be hearing from him. And I don't want us just to be hearers. I want us to learn to be doers of the word. And so I want us to give us time, not just to mindlessly go through like an invitation time, but for us to intentionally take a moment and say, God, did I hear from you this morning? And here's what I know. I can't make that happen, but I know that he's stronger than my weakness to preach. And so even if I mess up, his word is still strong. Even if I'm boring, his word is still strong. Even if you get something that has nothing to do with what I preach and it's from the word, that's great, because the point of today is not for you to like my sermon. The point of today is for us to encounter and hear God together. And so as you do that, I'm asking you, we're going to write it down at the end of the service, and if it's nothing, then here's what I'm going to ask you to do. You can blame me. That's okay, to a point. But then I'm going to say, God, was my heart hard? Did I miss you? And we're going to take some time in this service, so don't be surprised when I ask you to pull out a paper or your phone, and not to text, but to actually ask him to do a work. So that's what we're going to do this morning. I'm excited about this morning's passage, but We'll just jump right in. So we've been in the book of Galatians. We've been going through Galatians for a while now, and we're almost halfway through chapter 2, which eventually will pick up pace, maybe. But we're going to take as long, much time as it takes to go through the entire book of Galatians. And here's what's been happening in the book of Galatians. The Apostle Paul went to this area of Galatia, which is a whole region, and he started planting churches in the cities of Galatia. And every time he planted a church, very quickly, persecution arose in that town. He would get run out of town. Sometimes at one point, when I say run out of town, I mean they actually threw rocks at him until they thought he was dead. He was mostly dead. And then he would get up and do it in the next town, and that's what he did. And shortly after Paul left, these churches, some new people came in that had some new teaching for them. And this new teaching added some things to the gospel. Here's the teaching they were saying. Yes, trusting in Jesus is great. He's really awesome. He's the Messiah. But you also need to obey the Old Testament law. So the way you get saved is Jesus plus obeying the law. And the way you live the Christian life is Jesus plus the law. And all of a sudden, Paul hears this, and he doesn't take this as a little minor difference. It's throwdown time. He's writing the book of Galatians, and if you remember chapter 1, he was not nice when he opened chapter 1. He said things like, if anyone is preaching a different gospel, let them be accursed, basically. Let them be damned to hell forever. So he's a little upset. He says that twice. He gets after it, and what he's been throwing down is, I got this gospel from God himself. People didn't give it to me. I didn't make this up. Like, I encountered God on this road, and he gave me the gospel, and I'm presenting it to you. That's what Paul's just been doing. So in Galatians chapter 2, verse 9, let's jump in, because I'm trying to abbreviate the review every week. Galatians 2, verse 9 says this, and when James and Cephas, that's Peter, and John, who seemed to be pillars, perceived the grace that was given to me, they gave the right hand of fellowship to Barnabas and me, that we should go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. So here's what he just said. They got together with the apostles to make sure they were on the same page, and here's what they saw. You know what? That guy's preaching the same gospel. He serves the same Lord. He's just got a different mission. He's taking the gospel to the Gentiles. We're probably taking it to the Jews. And so these guys said, we're all on the same team here. We talked about that 2 weeks ago. But then they add something really quick here. Look at what they add in verse 10. And you almost skip past it if you're not careful, because it's so quick. And it's so subtle. It's not the main point of what this passage is about, but it's a major theme in the Bible. Look at what happens in verse 10. Only ask us this. They ask us one thing. They didn't add anything to the gospel. They didn't say, hey, could you at least cut out the bacon thing? They didn't do anything. They said they ask us one thing. They ask us to remember the poor. The very thing I was eager to do. Now, I got to be honest. I almost blazed the trail right through that. It was almost... 2 weeks ago, it was almost the last 2 minutes of the message. We got to remember the poor, yada, 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 and then do the introduction. But the more I chewed on that, the more I wrestled with it, there was something that stood out to me in this. Why in the world, after they had this massive conversation about the gospel, about is it through Jesus? Do we have to get circumcised? Do we need the law? They would have this intense theological conversation. They would agree they were on the same page, and they ask one thing. Remember the poor. Why would the apostles do that? Why would Paul make it such a big deal? Right? Why would he even mention it? Why did he need to mention this thing for the poor? And here's what we're going to do today. Normally I wait to tell you the conclusion. I'm going to tell you the conclusion now and demonstrate to you. Here's what I think is going on. I do not think it's this. I don't think they were saying, you know what, we got a lot of poor people in Jerusalem, so why don't we do this little backdoor, kind of like in the politicians, we're in Tallahassee, we're familiar with that world, apparently. Well, let's do a little rider clause on this whole apostleship thing. Let's add this thing, send some money to the poor, and then we'll be good. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, backdoor meetings. I don't think it's that. That undermines everything he just said. I also don't think it's this. Hey, we're Jerusalem. We're the big dogs. Like, we're the mother church. And you little measly Gentile churches, you need to send some money our way just to show some respect. I don't think it's that, because that's the exact opposite of everything he said so far. Here's what I think the reason is. I think the apostles knew this. They spent 3 years with Jesus. 3 years. You know what I think they saw in him? You know what I think I heard in his teaching? Something about the poor that was a big deal to Jesus. I think they knew something about God, that God has a heart for the poor. And since God has a heart for the poor, when he's working his heart out in us, it should cause a heart for the poor in us as well. And they knew that when you get after planting churches and making disciples and strengthening churches, you know what can get neglected really quickly? The poor. What are they bringing to the table in a church planting movement, right? I need money. I need people of power and prestige. I need people, I need influencers in town. I need the best athlete in school. I don't need the nerd in school. I need the coolest guy in school, and then we'll reach the school for Jesus. It's not that thinking at all. They're saying, listen, the heart of God is to have a heart for the poor, and if you miss that, if you lose it in this process of making disciples and planting churches and establishing, if you miss the poor, you're going to miss the heart of God. That's his heart, and I want to show that to you. So I know I say this every single week. I know I said every week, but we're going to look at a lot of passages this morning. Apparently, I should have known this going into the book of Galatians. Apparently, I go to all over the Bible. Every week, I teach you the whole Bible is what I apparently do. So can I show you some passages in the Old Testament? Here's what we're going to do. Look at the Old Testament. I want to see God's heart for the poor in the Old Testament. Then I want to show you Jesus' heart for the poor in the New Testament. Look at the Old Testament. Leviticus chapter 23, verse 22. Most boring book in the Bible. Am I allowed to call books boring? Shouldn't do that. I won't do that. Leviticus chapter 22, flip over, or 23. And here's what God said. He's given his law to his people. And in Leviticus chapter 23, verse 22, God says this. When you reap the harvest of your land. So you've planted your fields and you're reaping your fields. You're going and getting all the food that you grew. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge. It's kind of a weird rule. Don't get everything. Kind of leave the edges alone. Leave all the fruit there. Leave all the wheat there. Leave all the food. Don't get all of it. And here's what I would expect. Get that stuff and give it to God. That's not what he says here. Nor shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest. So if you drop some stuff in the field, just leave it. If you dropped it, leave it alone. You shall leave them for who? For the poor and for the sojourner. And why? I am the Lord your God. I mean, out of the gate, he's setting up this crazy rule. Listen, when you plant all these fruit trees, don't harvest everything. When you plant all the harvest and you leave it there for the poor, why? Because I'm God. It's because of who I am. I want you to remember the poor, even when you're making all your money for the whole year. You're gathering all your food to feed your family. I want you to remember there's poor people. If you know the story of Ruth, this should sound familiar to you. So every year when they harvested, every year when they gathered for their food, God had instilled automatically for them, leave something for the poor. When you're getting all that money and all that income, remember the people who aren't. Remember the people who are hungry. Here's what he says in Deuteronomy chapter 15, verses 7 through 11. Listen, you're going to be flipping like crazy or tapping on your screens. Here's what he says in Deuteronomy chapter 15. Again, Deuteronomy is when Moses is saying goodbye to all the Israelites. He's about to go die. They're about to go in the promised land. And here's what he reminds them of, something that God had said. If among you one of your brothers should become poor in any of your towns within your land that the Lord your God has given you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against your poor brother, but you shall open your hand to him and lend him sufficient for his need, whatever it may be. You see what God says? You're about to get a land, and you're going to have all this land. You're going to have all this stuff you've never had before, but guess what? They're still going to be poor people. And if something happens and one of your friends, one of your brothers gets poor, don't harden your heart to him. You ever felt that happen for you? Y'all seen that? Listen, I have to be honest. Working at a church, it's really easy to harden your heart to this because people will come every single day asking for money or for food. And it's really easy to say, this is your fault, man. It's really easy to harden my heart and say, listen, if you would work a job. Listen, if you wouldn't have gotten involved in drugs. Hey, if you would have planned a little better, you should have had some savings put aside. It's really easy. And some of those things are true, but not always. It's easy to harden your heart. He says, don't harden your heart. Open up your hand and give to him what he needs. It's really a bold statement by God. Look at verse 8. But you shall open your hand. I already did verse 8. Sorry. Verse 9. Take care lest there be an unworthy thought in your heart, like the ones I just shared that I have. And you say, and this is the seventh year, the year of release is near. God would, they remove all debt every 7 years is what they were supposed to do. So what the fear was, year 6, they would stop giving loans to people because they would get away with it scot-free. He says, that starts happening, and your eye looks grudgingly on your poor brother, and you give him nothing. And he cried to the Lord against you, and you'd be guilty of sin. He's like, man, listen, you're going to call that you do that, and they cry to me. I'm going to hear them, and I'm not going to like it. Verse 10, you shall give to him freely, and your heart shall not be grudging when you give to him. Isn't it just like God? You're going to give to him, and you're going to like it. You ever said that to your kids? No? maybe. Okay, I just said to my kids, be nice to your brother and like being nice to your brother. If you don't do that, well, you parent different than me, apparently. You shall give him freely, your heart shall not be grudging when you give to him because of this. The Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all that you undertake. For they will never cease to be poor in the land. So here's what God's saying. Because I'm God, I don't want you to harden your heart towards the poor. Psalm 35, David's singing praises to God. And look at one of the things that he praises God for. In Psalm 35, verse 10, he says this. All my bones shall say, all of me, every bit of me, even to my bones, is going to say this. O Lord, who is like you? And look what he doesn't say. You're strong. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say, you made everything. He says, who is like you, delivering the poor from him who is too strong for him, the poor and the needy from him who robs him. David's saying, God, every part of me wants to sing praises to you because you're amazing, because you deliver the poor from people who would oppress him. You starting to pick up a theme with God? It's even in the book of Proverbs. Look at this, Proverbs 14:31. Whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker. Like, listen, you mess with the poor, you better watch out, because there's someone who made him and he's going to take it personal. You're insulting him. He also says this, but he who is generous to the needy honors him. So whenever you're kind and generous to the needy, you're showing honor to God because he's the one who made him. Proverbs 19:17. This is a great one. Whoever is generous to the poor, look at this one, lends to the Lord. Does that seem crazy to you? You're giving God a loan when you give money to the poor. That's what it said right there. And he will repay him for his deed. Like, listen, there's a God that's saying, when you take care of the poor, like, I don't know what that actually means for God to be in debt to you. That's almost the idea that it's saying here, that God's like, yep, okay, I saw that. I'm going to remember that. I'm not in debt to people, so I'm going to take care of that. Look at what else he says, and these ones get a little more aggressive. We're going to go to Isaiah. This is when God is upset with the people of Israel. Look at what he says to the people of Israel in Isaiah chapter 58. We're going to look at verses 4 through 7. He says this, behold, you fast. So they're doing this thing, they're fasting. All the people are fasting, only to quarrel and to fight and to hit with a wicked fist. Fasting like yours this day will not make your voice to be heard on high. Is such the fast that I choose? You think that's what I like? You fast, you got all these religious events, all this religious activity. I mean, it's really fancy to fast. You're not eating. It's such a big deal. You're not eating in order to pray, but you're fighting with people. You think I like that? You think what I like is that kind of fast? Is the fast that I choose a day for a person to humble himself? Is it to bow his head down like a reed, or to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Will you call this a fast and day acceptable to the Lord? Verse 6, here's what he says. Is not this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free and to break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them, not to hide yourself from your own flesh. See what he just said? You think I want to fast where you don't eat? You know what I'd prefer? Why don't you go feed some people who are hungry? Why don't you, and this one's crazy, let them come and live in your house. Listen, God doesn't have a little heart for the poor. That's pretty radical. Would y'all agree with that? If I said, your homework assignment this week, go find a homeless person, make a bedroom for him, and invite him into your house. Y'all going to do that assignment this week? Yeah, I don't know if y'all freaked out or not. Let me move on before I get too crazy. Isaiah chapter 1. I'm going back in Isaiah this time because I want you to see how he starts off the book of Isaiah in verses 12 through 17. When you come to appear before me, who has required of you this trampling of my court? You're showing up here? Who? What do you think you're doing? Like, you're showing up to worship me and you're making me mad. That's what God basically says here. Bring no more vain offerings. Incense is an abomination to me. New moon and Sabbath and the calling of convocations. I cannot endure iniquity and solemn assemblies. You get together to worship. You're going to be all serious about God. I can't stomach it. That's what he's saying there. It's making me angry. That's what God's saying. Verse 14, when your new moons and your appointed feasts, my soul hates. They become a burden to me. I'm weary of bearing them. When you spread out your hands, I will hide my eyes from you. Even though you make many prayers, I will not listen. Let me skip down to verse 17. Here's what he says. Learn to do good. That's what he wants you to do. Learn to do good. Seek justice. Correct oppression. Bring justice to the fatherless. Plead the widow's cause. So here's God saying, listen, I care deeply about how you deal with people who are weak and oppressed and needy. You don't show up to worship me and ignore that and think I'm okay with it. Can you imagine God saying that about a church service? I can't stand your Sundays. Can you imagine him saying that? That's what he's saying to them. I can't stand it when you get together to worship me. Your singing makes me nauseous. I get angry because you show up here and you treat people like dirt all week long. Listen, if you didn't know that God would get aggressive, I'm sorry this is a rough introduction for you. Look at Ezekiel chapter 16. And I told you we had a lot of passages, so we're almost done with the Old Testament. Chapter 16, verse 48, he says this. As I live, declares the Lord God, your sister Sodom. So now he's talking to these people and saying, Sodom, the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, really bad town. He's going to tell you why he got mad at Sodom, and it might not be the reason you think. Your sister Sodom and her daughters have not done as you and your daughters have done. Behold, this was the guilt of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters had pride, excess of food, and prosperous ease, but did not aid the poor and needy. They were haughty and did an abomination before me, so I removed them when I saw it. Do you see what he said the pride of Sodom was there? They had a ton of food, they were doing great, and they didn't care about the poor and needy. Does that make anyone else uncomfortable here? Like, God, as I was reading that, I told my wife this week, you know, we're in an apartment now, which is really nice. It's a nice apartment, and we're starting to look at a house. And it could not be worse timing to start looking at a house and wrestling with these passages. It's actually really good timing for us to be wrestling with passages like this. But it's not just God in the Old Testament. And we are in the book of Galatians. Let's not go back to the law. Look at what Jesus says in the New Testament. Luke chapter 4. Now, this is Jesus kicking off his public ministry. He got baptized, he went to get tempted, now he shows up to Nazareth, and he shows up in synagogue, and he pulls out this scroll. Luke chapter 4, verse 16, he says this, and he came to Nazareth, where he'd been, Nazareth, I think I added an S in there, whatever, where he'd been brought up, as was his custom. He went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day, and he stood up to read. And the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to him, and he unrolled the scroll and found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to who?" The poor. Why didn't he say sinners? He said the poor. He sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovering of sight to the blind and to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Then right after he says, this is fulfilled in your hearing right now, that's why I'm here. Jesus says, I'm here for this reason. I'm here to proclaim good news to the poor. Look at what else he says in Luke chapter 14. Now, this one will ruffle your feathers if you see what's happening. Chapter 14, verse 1, he's on the Sabbath. He's at the house of a Pharisee. This guy says, hey, Jesus, you're awesome. Why don't you come to my house for dinner? Love to have a meal. So Jesus comes over, and as they're having a meal, look at what he says in verse 12. This would almost be rude. If you picture this, you invite Jesus and all of his disciples. That's a big meal. There's 12 hungry dudes showing up at your house ready to eat dinner. And there's no Publix. There's no McDonald's. You're not ordering pizza. You're making it from scratch. And then the guy you invite says this. I don't know what you would do if you invited me to your house for dinner and I said this to you at dinner. He says this. He also said to the man who had invited him, when you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, lest they also invite you in return and you be repaid. Here's what he says. When you give a feast, when you throw a party, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. Like, open up your next dinner party. Just here's the deal. Anyone who can't afford to invite you to their house or doesn't have a house, that's your dinner list. Why? Verse 14, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just. Like, do you see how radical Jesus is about this? Like, so when these apostles were walking with Jesus, they would be at a dinner, and all of a sudden he would say, "Man, why are all these rich people at your, why do you invite anyone poor here? Not a single poor person at your house for dinner?" Like, okay, my bad, Jesus. Like, do you see his heart for this here? It's shocking how intense Jesus is with this. Look at what it says in James chapter 2, in case you think it's just Jesus. "What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him?" And his answer, "If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to him, 'Go in peace, be warmed and filled,' without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead." Listen, you want to know what real faith is? Real faith is not going up to someone who's hungry and saying, "Man, it's going to be awesome when God feeds you one day. See you, bro." That's not real faith. Real faith gives that dude food. It's real faith. 1 John 3:17 says this, "But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him?" I'm going to go to one more passage. One more, because this is the one that really kicked me. Matthew chapter 25. You know this passage, right? Maybe. Jesus is talking about the last days and how he's going to sit in judgment of everyone. He says this, "When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glory." He's going to come back and he's going to sit on this amazing throne. "And before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate people one from the other as a shepherd separates the sheep and the goats. And he will place the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on his left." And look at his reason for separating them here. Look at what he says, verse 34. "The king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father.'" Like, man, the sheep, I'm not saying you guys are goats, but we'll go to the right-hand side. The sheep, "Hey, come on in." Like, man, God is happy with you. He's got, "Come on forever. I want you to come into heaven with me." And why? Verse 35, "For I was hungry and you gave me food. And I was thirsty and you gave me to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked. I didn't have any clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me." And then they're going to say, "I don't know if my memory's off. I don't remember that. Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you as a stranger? I don't remember ever doing that." And his response in verse 40, "The king will answer them, 'Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me.'" Do you hear what he just said the judgment's going to be like? "Hey, guys, come on into heaven. You got this great reward because you gave me food when I was real. I didn't have any food and you gave me food." And they're like, "We don't remember that." And he goes, "Yeah, when you did it to one of the least, like the lowest, most worthless human being you could possibly imagine, when you did it to them, it was like you did it to me. Get in here." And then look at what he says to the people on the left. Please don't take it personal. This isn't you guys. I'm not saying that. Everyone's going to sit on the right-hand side next week. Verse 41, "Then he will say to those on his left, 'Depart from me, you cursed, into eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels.'" It's kind of strong. Get out of my, just get. Like, where you're going, it's eternal punishment. It was originally for Satan and his angels, but get. Oh, that's not going to be a pleasant moment. Why? Verse 42. Same paradigm. "For I was hungry, and you didn't give me any food. I was thirsty, and you didn't give me anything to drink. I was a stranger. You wouldn't even welcome me in. You didn't give me clothes. I was sick and in prison. You didn't even come and visit me." And they're going to say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, okay, hold on, time out. I don't ever remember seeing you hungry." Same response, verse 45. "Then he'll say to them, 'Truly I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me.'" So when these guys talk about the gospel mission, and they say, "We just want you to remember one thing, the poor. Do you see why? Because it matters. Listen, you don't earn your salvation by feeding the poor. That's not the point of this. The point of this is when you're really saved, God does a work in your heart that makes it look like His. So when you stand before Him, what's going to have happened is He will have changed your heart, and it has a heart for the poor. And every time you see these people, these human beings that are in suffering, that are struggling, there should be this thing that happens in you that says, man, if I do this for them, it's like I get to do it for Jesus. Church, I know this isn't popular, because it is really easy in the church in America in the South to pretend like this is not part of the essence of Christianity. That's Jesus Christ. That's who He is. That's what He does, and that's what His people do. So here's what that means. We talked about gospel partnership and a gospel mission. If we plant all the churches in the world, if this place blows up and it's filled with a bunch of rich people who all look the same, and poor people don't feel welcome in this place, and people who are broken and weak and on their last rope, we blew it. We will have blown it. We will have missed the person and work of Jesus Christ. That's why when Paul hears that, he says, I was already eager to do that. In Galatians 2:10, yeah, when they said this, I'd already decided, man, I'm all over that. Do you know why? Because Paul had met Jesus. And we met Jesus and spent time with Jesus. You know what he found out mattered to Jesus? The poor. Like, it's a big deal. And guys, I got to be honest with you. I know it's hard. Is it okay if I share a couple stories of people that I know with you real quick? Let me tell you some stories of some people that I know. I know a couple. They were newlyweds. They'd been married less than a year. You know what they did? They met this homeless woman that was homeless, and they invited her to live in their apartment. You realize how crazy that is? How do you think their parents felt about that? Should the husband have been more concerned about his wife's safety than to let this crazy, psycho, homeless woman move into his house? I'm not telling you to be foolish. I'm just saying, yeah, they brought that woman to her house. And not for a day, not for a week, for a long time. And I wish I could tell you it ended awesome. It didn't, because the woman had some addictions issue, and they had to get her help and send her somewhere else. But she's not homeless anymore. She's in a house. They took her around and looked for jobs with her. They sat at a dinner table with this woman for night after night after night and ate dinner with her and told her about the love of Jesus Christ. I got to be honest. I think that sounds like Jesus. I wish we would be able to do it more. You know what I mean? Like, doesn't that sound like what the church should look like? Does that sound more like Jesus to you? And I know it's scary. I know it's overwhelming. Let me lay some of this stuff out for you. I'm going to read you some statistics. Can't get that word out. Apparently S's are hard today. This is from a book, When Helping Hurts. The average American lives on more than $90 a day. All right, you got that number? $90 a day. That's average. And these statistics are a little old, but just go with it. Around 1 billion people in the world live on less than $1 a day. And listen, when I say they live on less than $1, I don't mean they have an extra dollar. I mean $1 a day is how they buy all their food, all their clothes, all their shelter, all their insurance, whatever else, all the necessities of life. 1 billion people. Let me read this one to you. 2.6 billion, that's around 40% of the world's population, live on less than $2 a day. That's globally. I haven't even talked about poverty in America. Does that feel overwhelming to anyone else? Like, what do you even do with that kind of poverty? How do you even help with that? It feels completely overwhelming to me. And it's not just overwhelming, it's really complicated. It's not as simple as I just reach into my wallet and hand you $20. I want to tell you the story that happened one time. I was driving down the road and there was this homeless guy. He was kind of crazy, I got to be honest. Had a shopping cart. I don't know where he stole it from, but apparently, and everything that dude owned was in the shopping cart, and it was piled, I mean, just higher than he could see. And I don't know where he'd been sleeping that night, but it's rush hour. I'm headed home. It's around 4:35 p.m., and he's crossing a major intersection at a red light, and then right in front of all these cars, the cart tipped over, and his stuff went everywhere. I was like, oh, man. So my light turns green. Sweet. You know, I'm moving on. And literally, I felt God do this thing. He's like, Fias, like, and people are honking the horn or yelling at this dude because he just delayed them for who knows how long. So I pull over, and I get out, and I go to help this guy. And as soon as I walk up, you know what he did to me? Get away from me! Stop it! Like, bro, no, hey, I just want to help you pick it up, man. That's, like, it would have been really easy at that moment. It's like, fine, man. Bump this trash. I'm out. I'm going back to my car, going back to my house, hanging out with my wife and kids. I don't need to pick up your dirty clothes. Like, this is just gross. But I put him at ease because he didn't, like, everyone's yelling at the guy. Of course he's mad. I don't know the last time he slept in the bed or had a shower or a full meal. So maybe I should cut the guy a little slack, right? So I help him pick his stuff up. And so meanwhile, people are like driving by, hey, how can I help? How can I help? So one person drives by, rolls their window down, slows down, has, I guess, plastic Publix bags. Here's some bags. Boom. Literally, I was like, oh, thank you. That's so helpful. This other lady cracks her window enough to get her finger out, and she has some money right here. Money helps. I'm dead serious. Money fixes everything. And this dude was like, sweet. Like, literally, he was like, yeah, he was happy. He got 60 bucks. He was as happy as he possibly could be. He was literally dancing. Like, we get his stuff over to the side of the door. He's like, bro, you want to split it? I was like, no, thank you. You can keep all $60. And he had these Krispy Kreme donuts. I don't know how old they were. He pulls them out. He's like, yeah, starts eating donuts. It's party time. He just got 60 bucks. But her biggest thing of effort, that's it. Money fixes everything. It didn't. It didn't fix everything. It helped that guy. I'm not saying it didn't help. But I got to be honest, it's really, what did that guy need? I think at that moment he just needed help picking up his stuff, but he needed way more than that, didn't he? He needed a lot more that a free meal wasn't quite going to fix. Listen, I know it's really, really complicated. Any of y'all traveled overseas? Have you seen that poverty yet? That's not as simple as build you a house. It's way harder than that. But here's the problem. I know it's overwhelming, and I know it's complicated. But Jesus didn't say, help the poor if it's simple. He didn't say, help the poor if there were only a few of them and you could actually deal with all of it. He didn't say, care about the poor if it was safe for you or comfortable. He said, when you help them, you helped me. I'm really curious. If you saw Jesus homeless, would you invite him into your house to live? Would you invite him to your house for dinner? And he's saying, that's who you're seeing. I do want to give you a couple resources, because I did not want this to be a sermon about how to minister to the poor. We could talk about that for weeks. That's too complicated. I'm going to give you a couple resources to write down that if you want to study how, let me tell you a couple books you can read. One of those books is called Toxic Charity by Robert Lupton. If you don't get all this written down, you can email me, and I will try to do better with email. I'm here now, so I will do better with email and Facebook stuff. Toxic Charity is one book. Another one is called When Helping Hurts by Steve Corbett and Brian Fickert. Toxic Charity is easier to read. It's more about poverty in the U.S., When Helping Hurts is more about the global poverty and how complicated it is. And then here's another resource, because I wanted to give you not just something to read, I wanted to give you a possible something to do, okay? Nobody freak out. Step one is not open your home, unless God puts that in your heart. I don't want to tell you not to do that. We can talk about through some of the wisdom of how to do that. But Baptist Global Response, is this organization. And what it is, it's a bunch of missionaries through the International Mission Board. This does humanitarian aid. It's the arm that helps with that. And what these people do is they collect money for projects for missionaries, because what they're doing is they're not just feeding the poor, they're feeding the poor and sharing the gospel. They got to do both. So these missionaries are getting access to unreached peoples through some of this stuff. And so this is how you can fund that stuff. They have a catalog. Looks like this right now. I'm going to order some of these this week, and I don't know when they'll be there, but I'll get them on the back. You can come and look at this if you want, or you can go on their webpage. It's called Baptist Global Response. It has all sorts of projects in here. You can buy rabbits for families, or stock a pond with fish, or buy a pig. You can pay for medical care for victims of human trafficking, or give them a place to stay. It's got all sorts of things. I just want to encourage you, check that thing out. It's called Baptist Global Response. I'm trying to give you some resources so it's not all just a verbal beatdown. And so I also want you to know this, and here's what I want you to know. Here's my prayer for us as a church. I don't want you to run out and just start doing a whole bunch of things. What I want is for your heart to want to do things. Do you see the difference there? And sometimes your heart gets warmed up as you do it. I know that. But if you just run out and do it, but you miss the part that it's a heart for the needy, you're going to miss it. You'll be all about just doing things and not being like Christ in this. What I want for us is to be a church that has a heart for homeless people, for poor people, for needy people. Because, listen, I don't know who's in here today. If a homeless person walks into this church, will they get turned away at the door? I don't know. I'm asking. You don't have to answer that right now. I've seen that happen at churches that I've been at. Homeless guys, no. Go somewhere else. Will they be ignored? Is there like a roped off area for the people who haven't showered in a couple of weeks? Or are we just like, man, come and sit with me. Have you eaten anything? Maybe afterward we can go eat some Wendy's or whatever is good around here, right? Or Olive Garden, whatever you want to do. I don't know how y'all roll. Whatever they want. What would that look like for us? I think that sounds like what the church should be. And here's why. It's more than just the heart of Jesus. Do you understand how poor spiritually we all are? We're really good at polishing the outside. We got our fancy duds on. I'm all fancy dressed up here with fancy dress pants and a button-up shirt and nice shoes. It looks like I don't need Jesus. But spiritually, I'm worse off than the worst homeless person you can imagine. It was so bad that I needed Jesus to make himself poor. You know that verse? So that we might become rich in God. Like, that's the heart of Jesus. And if he didn't do that for us, you don't have a shot at heaven. It is the heart of our Savior for each and every single one of us. So today, here's my invitation for you. My invitation for you is this. If your heart is hard towards the poor, would you ask God to change your heart in that? Would you ask him to show you something to do this week for someone? And maybe he doesn't give the opportunity. That's okay. Would you ask him to do that? And the other thing is this. Would you remember how poor you really are? It's probably good for us to not just remember we're poor, but to proclaim it. He is poor. I am poor, and he is rich, and he made me rich in him. That is the essence of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So I just want to preach the gospel to you for a moment really quick. As our worship team comes up, I'm going to have a time of invitation, a time of response. But let me preach the gospel to you. Here's the deal. Jesus died on the cross because we have hard hearts. And he was super kind to the poor. So when you place your trust in Jesus, he took all of your sin and all of our hardness and he put it on Jesus. But you know what else he did? He gave us all the righteousness of Jesus. So you don't have to perform well in this to please him. He performed well enough for you. So if you're struggling with an immense amount of guilt today, I don't want you to run out of here and be like, I felt totally guilty. I'm going to do something. I want you to feel that guilt and run to Jesus and say, you paid the price for that. Like, you paid the price for my lack of compassion, and you gave me all the righteousness that I need. Like, you are pleased with me because of the work of Jesus. I don't need to go out and make a meal right now to make you happy. But would you help my heart want to do that? Do you guys see the difference in that? That's what I want. I want us to be a people that have a heart for the poor, because I think that's what God's heart is. And if we'd be his people and have his heart, that's the kind of people we have to be. So here's what I'm going to give you a moment to. They're going to be playing some music right now. Remember how I said I wanted you to write something down? Why don't you pull out your paper, pull out that phone, and as they're playing some music right now, why don't you take a moment and say, God, what is it that you would have me do? What did you say to me today? Just go ahead and write that down. Think through what he said to you. Church, here's what I want for us. I hope that in that moment God said something to you and you were able to write something down, but I hope more than that, that you were reminded of the gospel of Jesus Christ, that he's a God that loves the poor and needy, and we are all in one way or another poor and needy. Okay, so I'm going to ask, we're going to give an offering as an act of worship, so I'm going to ask, I think it's Dr. Fielding. I don't know who's praying. Is he here? There he is. Awesome. We're going to pray for our offering. So I'm going to ask the ushers to go ahead and come on down.